Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Over the past couple of years, there's been an awakening in workplaces in America that sexual harassment is not okay, it's wrong, and it will not be tolerated. It's estimated that up to 75% of women have experienced some form of workplace sexual harassment. Here is former Fox anchor Gretchen Carlson talking about it at a TED Talk.
All I wanted was a much-deserved promotion, and he told me to get up on the desk and spread them. All the men in my office wrote down on a piece of paper the sexual favors that I could do for them. All I had asked for was an office with a window. I asked for his advice about how I could get a bill out of committee. He asked me if I brought my knee pads. Those are just a few of the horrific stories that I heard from women over the last year as I've been investigating workplace sexual harassment. And what I've found out is that it's an epidemic across the world. It's a horrifying reality for millions of women when all they want to do every day is go to work.
There's a lot there in Carlson's words, but I do want to point out that all of her examples are focused on women pretty much in that white-collar workspace, women in offices and women trying to get a bill out of committee. But what about the women and men who work in homes or on construction sites and fields and fast food? Who's going to hear their Me Too cry? Nuestra Voz, our voice, is working to empower workers who deal with the on-the-job sexual harassment in areas where women are the most economically and socially vulnerable. They want them to know their rights and legal protections. We're talking about that this hour on The Source, and there's lots of ways for you to join our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. We'd like to hear your story. What did you experience? How did you deal with it? How did it impact your life? And you can remain anonymous. The number again is 210-614-8980. Your story can help us understand what's going on and come up with ways to serve people who have been impacted by this. And you could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Tweet at us at @tprsource. Joining us this hour to talk about workplace sexual harassment, Sarah Donaldson is an attorney for the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. Sarah, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Judit Vega is with us, a health justice coordinator with the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. Judit, great to have you here.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
And on the line, Sharon Tihani is with us, director of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund at the National Women's Law Center. Sharon, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to go straight to Judit Vega with the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. And if you could help us understand what our voice campaign is looking to accomplish. What do y'all perceive needs to be done? What is the work?
So with the Nuestra Voz, our voice campaign in San Antonio and in other communities in Texas, it is a Know Your Rights campaign. And the goal of our campaign is to give workers the tools that they need to recognize, respond to, and report workplace sexual harassment. We provide Know Your Rights presentations and pláticas throughout our partner organizations, and it will help people to understand what they can do if they are experiencing harassment and help all workers understand that they have the right to complain without fear of retaliation.
Sharon Tihani at the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, the Me Too movement has, I think it's been phenomenal, a great game changer. Certainly it helps people communicate that when you're explaining that something is going wrong, that people recognize this is not acceptable and this has to be addressed, which before this, you know, it was a much bigger climb to achieve that. But it does seem to me like this worked particularly better in some workspaces than in others. And can you tell me if that's true or not?
Sure. So at the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, we get requests for assistance from people who are facing workplace sex harassment. And what I can tell you is that we receive these requests from every single industry you can think of. And so it certainly is a problem across the board. But what we also know is that it's more of a problem for low-wage workers. And that's because sex harassment, a great deal of it, is about power, and low-paid workers have less power. And because sex harassment, fighting it, is about resources. It's about being able to find an attorney. It's about what happens if you get retaliated against. Do you have savings in case you lose your job? And, of course, most low-paid workers don't. And that's why it's so important that this program is happening, because it's going to help low-paid workers know more about their rights and know what they can do.
Sarah Donaldson, Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. What type of services are you all offering?
Sure. Well, TRLA, we provide free legal services to low-income people of all on all kinds of issues, that basically every area of the law that affects low-income people. Our employment team, we represent people who are farm workers, people in the restaurant industry, people in construction, people in hospitality, domestic workers, home health workers, on all kinds of issues, including wage issues, trafficking issues. But also, we've represented lots of workers in these industries, including the poultry industry, on sexual harassment claims. And so we give advice to low-income workers who come to us. We help them figure out what they want to do, and help them take action if they want to. We help them file charges with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is the federal agency that investigates discrimination claims. And then in some cases, we file lawsuits, and we recover damages and hopefully also make changes in those workplaces on behalf of our clients.
Hudit Vega used the phrase people who are economically and socially vulnerable. I'm really concerned about maybe the area of the LGBTQ community. Is that a particular area where there are people who have been victimized?
Yes, we know that with increased vulnerability, such as being LGBTQ or also being a woman of color or an immigrant, that increases your likelihood and your vulnerability to be harassed at work. And it is something that we see quite a bit in our LGBT community, specifically with trans women. People are often harassed at work, and a lot of times people are not able to be out at work. And so that creates another level of insecurity in terms of reporting, because then if it's already a homophobic environment, if you won't be listened to if you are harassed.
And there are people who read LGBTQ as this is an individual who basically is inviting being sexually harassed, and they that is not true. Just because you were LGBTQ doesn't mean that you have an open invitation for you're sexually inviting people, right?
No. And it makes it worse as well that a lot of states in the United States don't provide workplace harassment laws of protection for LGBT individuals.
Right. And so we are going to be talking about that this hour, workplace sexual harassment. We're talking about it in the world of high finance to domestic workers, people who work in the fields, in migrant work, and also people who work in the halls of power all around us. It happens everywhere. It does not discriminate. Men, women, LGBTQ, people of color, people who come from, the power in society. But it's not about sex. This is about power, stripping power away from individuals. And in its wake, it leaves trauma, deep trauma, PTSD-type symptoms. So we're going to talk about this afternoon. Where can you find help? Where can you find recovery? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. Well, Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Low-wage workers and women of color are among those most vulnerable to sexual harassment and abuse, in part because they are kept uninformed about their rights. There is a campaign, Our Voice, to try to change that, inform individuals about their rights, and letting them know about free training that is going on in the area and confidential legal services that are being conducted and provided by the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. Also, do you have a question for our experts about your rights and legal options when it comes to on-the-job sexual harassment? Are you unsure about what you're experiencing at work, what to do about it? And you can be anonymous. The number to call in for that is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. Judith Vega is with us. She is the Health Justice Coordinator with the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. And during the break, you said you had a story that you wanted to share.
Yes, I just wanted to share how traumatizing this experience can be and how kind of socially acceptable it is in certain circles, because you've experienced it before and it's violence against women is normalized. So I have a relative who from Central America who escaped gang violence and who actually had a hit on her. They were trying to kill her, and she escaped this violence in her home country in Central America and arrived here in San Antonio. She works in the food service industry, and she is undocumented. And her first employer that she had here in this community knew of her status and had a friend who would come every single day and tell her things and harass her as a customer. But because he was a friend of the employer, it was kind of accepted and it was encouraged by the employer. Because she did not return the sexual favors that were asked of her, she was terminated. And this is a young woman who has experienced a lot of violence in her home country, both in her home, again, from her partner and with gang violence. And it was just so traumatizing for her to escape that and experience that again here. And she was at risk again for that. She still works in the food service industry, but because of that experience and because of a lot of family conversations that we had with her, she understands that she does not have to tolerate that behavior.
Sharon Tahani, director of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund at the National Women's Law Center. When does inappropriate behavior become the sexual harassment?
So there's a legal standard about when comments or physical touching can cross over into sexual harassment. Unfortunately, it's quite a high standard. It has to be considered severe or pervasive or a condition of your employment. No employer should use that as a standard. That's not what you want in your workplace. And so employers' policies can obviously go beyond that and say that this kind of behavior, regardless if it meets the legal standard, shouldn't be happening here. And that's what I would hope employers would do.
When you have the story that we heard from Hudit just now, and an individual working in the food industry with customers, and a customer is coming doing all this offensive behavior, what can you do, Sharon?
You can talk to your employer, because it is also the employer's responsibility if customers are doing this. And it sounded like in the example that Hudit gave, it wasn't just the customer doing it, it was the employer encouraging the customer. So clearly
Correct.
There's a huge problem in that workplace. So it is the employer's responsibility, even if the customer is doing it. The employer should have practices in place. The employer should have a way to complain. There's also organizations that you can go to outside of the employer, like Sarah's organization or the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission or the Texas Sarah, can you remind me what the Texas Workforce Board, is that the right number? Is that the right name?
Yes, it's the Texas Workforce Commission's, it's the Texas Workforce Commission Civil Rights Division, yes.
All right, and so Sarah Donaldson, Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, what kind of legal action could have been taking place in that example?
Sure. Well, great question, and thank you, Hudit, for sharing. One of the things that comes up in Hudit's example is a quid pro quo, which we all know what that means, this for that. And that's when, as Sharon was mentioning, that's one of the claims that you can have related to sexual harassment. And so there you saw that, because the worker refused advances, she was terminated. It can also be, you can also have quid pro quo when somebody is promised things in exchange for sexual favors. So you could have a claim for sexual harassment in that situation. It's really important to remember, as Sharon mentioned, that the employer is responsible for dealing with harassment that happens in the job, in the workplace, and also in other contexts that are related to the work. And so customer harassment is sexual harassment. Harassment by vendors, harassment by clients and relatives of clients, harassment that can happen outside of the workplace, let's say at a company party. So it's important to recognize that it's not just because somebody's not an employee of the employer, that does not get the employer off the hook. And so what someone could do is file a charge of discrimination with the EEOC or TWC. It's important to know that there are strict time limits for doing that.
The number to call in is 210-614-8980 as we talk about workplace sexual harassment. And let's go to the phones with Jane. Jane, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Thanks. Yes, I filed a complaint with the EEOC regarding sexual harassment and racial discrimination back in May of this year. And when I went in, I was interviewed, I was asked why I didn't say something sooner. And I was concerned at that moment in time if the EEOC was taking my complaint seriously. And, we're still going through the investigation as we speak, and it's kind of a waiting game, but I'm not sure if there's anything else I can do at this point.
Jane, thanks for calling in, and I'm sorry you had to go through that. Sarah Donaldson, Sarah, tell me, what can you tell Jane?
Jane, thank you for sharing your story, and also it's great that you reached out and took action. It's important to take action if you feel safe doing so. I guess what I would say is I could just talk about the EEOC process. You file a charge with the EEOC. It's a required step before going to court. You can't go straight to court, and you have to do that within a certain time period, 180 days for state law claims and 300 days for federal claims. And the EEOC investigates. They get lots of these complaints, and so I do share your frustration. Sometimes it does take a while. That is because of the volume of complaints that they get. And I would say that one thing that is available to a worker, if the complaint has been pending for 180 days, the worker has a right to request a right to sue letter in order to file a lawsuit in court. And so in a lot of situations, the EEOC can provide free mediation. They always actually provide free mediation if both parties want that option. And in some situations, that can result in a resolution of the case. But what I would say about the EEOC process is that it does take a while. You do have a right to request a right to sue letter after the charge has been pending for 180 days. And it's a really good point that you raise about reporting reporting to the employer. And we always encourage, where possible, that workers take steps. If they're experiencing harassment, review your employer's anti-harassment policy and follow it. If there's no policy, report to your supervisor. If your supervisor is the harasser, report it to someone above them or another supervisor. I do want to step back and say it is never anybody's fault that they are harassed. You shouldn't have to be taking steps to respond to sexual harassment. It's on the harasser not to harass. It's on the employer to stop it when it happens. But reporting it can put you in a better position if you have a claim later in court, because there are some defenses that employers can raise if they had a policy in place and the worker didn't take advantage of it. So it's always something we mention if you have the option to do that. But there are exceptions. If you had a very good reason for not reporting, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's fatal to your claim. So, I would recommend consulting with an attorney in that situation.
But Hudit Vega, in your story, the individual, your family member, a person was in the country without authorization, and that makes that individual vulnerable. But they also have legal protections in this circumstance, right? I mean, but how does that kind of work in the real world? I mean, do people feel like I may have these protections, but I don't know if that's really going to, in this environment, this day and age?
I think because of the anti-immigrant rhetoric and the climate that's going on right now in our country, a lot of people may know that, but may still fear speaking out.
And also fear, even if they file a complaint. Sharon Tahani, when people file a complaint, does immigration status come into that?
It does not come into that. If you reach out, obviously, to the Times Up Legal Defense Fund, we're a private organization, and it should not reach. It should not come into it if you file with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. But as Hudeet said, given the rhetoric that's going on right now, of course, people are very worried about that.
You hear things like, "If you report me, I'm going to call ICE on you, and you will be deported." And that, if you're in, undocumented, that is just like, you know, that's nightmare stuff. I mean, Hudeet, is that kind of stuff what happens? Is that what people say?
Yes, and most recently we received a call of someone who had a visa, who was legally able to work in the United States, but they were in a situation as a domestic worker where they were socially isolated, and their visa was taken away, and they were not provided with payment, which I think was veering into kind of a human trafficking situation. But that person, because they isolated them and they abused them, the employer told them, you know, if you report, you cannot report me, because if you report me, they will take your visa away. So when you're in a situation of abuse like that, you will believe that. She was able to escape that situation and go back home, but she's worried now to work here, even though she's legally able to.
And Sarah Donaldson, the legal protection, does that, I file a complaint, and does that mean I can't be deported?
Well, I wouldn't put it that way necessarily, but I would echo what Hudeet and Sharon mentioned, that immigration status shouldn't come into play. It's not relevant. And there are some protections for individuals who are threatened because of their immigration status. And it really depends on the circumstances. You should consult with an immigration attorney. And we have immigration attorneys we work with in our organization who analyze these claims. But threats to, you know, call immigration if you leave, or threats to call immigration if you report me, in some situations, that combined with other factors can lead to a finding of human trafficking. There is immigration relief available to some victims of human trafficking and other crimes, including workplace crimes. And so that's something that we look at confidentially in cases where the facts present themselves. I also want to mention that threats by themselves to do things like call immigration, sue somebody, that by itself is retaliation. The standard is a lot broader for retaliation than for discrimination. And so the question is, would it dissuade a reasonable worker who was otherwise interested in complaining from making a complaint? So even threats that are not completed can be retaliation.
And what would be the penalty for retaliation?
It's a claim under the same laws that prohibit sexual harassment and other forms of discrimination. And so we've had cases before where there was a discrimination charge filed with the EEOC. Retaliation happened because of that filing of that charge. And what you do is file another charge because that's another separate claim under either Title VII, which is the federal law that prohibits workplace discrimination, or Chapter 21 of the Texas Labor Code.
And does this get into he said, she said type of a world? Do you need documentation or text or something to show that this actually happened?
It's always helpful if there is evidence. Of course, credible testimony is evidence, right? That is evidence. But we always encourage people, especially if they're going through sexual harassment, to keep a record of it. Keep a record of what happened, who, when, did you report it, what happened. And we have a little log book that we hand out during our presentations for people to keep those records.
All right, we're talking about workplace sexual harassment, trying to bring the movement of Me Too into the areas where low wage areas, where there's not so many protections and people are particularly vulnerable. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're talking about workplace sexual harassment. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. If you own or manage a business, do you provide sexual harassment training for your employees? Employees, have you been taking? Have you been given this kind of training? Do you feel that it was sufficient or maybe you thought it was unnecessary? What questions do you have about what qualifies as sexual harassment at work and what can be done? What rights do you have as an employee? The number again is 210-614-8980. Sarah Donaldson, attorney for Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, there's this case, the Carmen Garza case that the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid represented in court. What is that and what was the outcome?
Yes. Well, Ms. Garza worked as a home care worker in the Rio Grande Valley, and she was sexually harassed, inappropriately touched, repeatedly harassed by a patient's son in the home where she worked. Even after she reported this to the employer said, oh, sorry, we can't do anything about that. He's not an employee. And so we sued in federal court, and we won about a year's pay for Ms. Garza after litigation. I think this case points out a few important things. One is that it doesn't have to be, as we mentioned before, it doesn't have to be an employee in order for the employer to be liable. Another issue that I wanted to mention is it illustrates, you know, Ms. Garza worked for a home health agency. So it was a larger home health agency. And that's important because in the sexual harassment context, in order to be covered by the laws that the EEOC and the TWC investigate, you have to have 15 or more employees. So that unfortunately leaves a lot of domestic workers out of the picture. That doesn't mean you don't have a claim. So you can have claims for sexual assault, negligence. You may have other kinds of claims, personal injury-like claims against the employer. But in Ms. Garza's case, fortunately, it was a big enough employer, even though it was in the home health industry working in a private home, that we were able to bring claims under those statutes for Ms. Garza.
Sharon Tahani, director of Time's Up Legal Defense Fund and the National Women's Law Center. What about remedies that aren't bringing in the, EEOC and all this? I mean, it seemed like there's social pressure that can be brought to bear. I mean, that's why Harvey Weinstein and all these other people, Charlie Rose, they felt the Matt Lauer, because of social pressure. The community as a whole said, we recognize what's going on. We don't tolerate this. These people have got to go. Is that something that can be brought to bear, even on a local level, through social media? I mean, just speaking out or picketing or something.
That is certainly one way of bringing about social change. And one of the things we do at Time's Up Legal Defense Fund is we help people find attorneys. We also help fund cases. And we also help fund media assistance for exactly that reason, because sometimes it can be that media assistance is what the case really needs to draw attention to the problem and make that change in that way. I also want to note that some of those cases that you're talking about, one of the reasons why things went on so long without anyone doing anything is when the cases would settle or when people would come forward to complain, the workers who came forward were forced to sign non-disclosure agreements. And so they were basically forced to sign something that said that I won't talk about this. And that really allows the harassment to continue, because you think you're alone, you think it's only about you, and so you either don't complain, or if you do complain, you sign one of these agreements, and you don't realize this is a pattern and there's lots of other workers being affected. And so one of the things that we see on a policy level that some states are doing is moving away from these non-disclosure agreements, and it really is best practices for employers not to use them, because they're really in the way of stopping sex harassment.
Got an email from Alicia. What options should I take if I see sexual harassment at work, but I am not the target? Should I report on my coworker's behalf? Sarah Donaldson?
That is a very good question, and thank you so much for asking. So the first thing you can do is support your coworker, listen to them, be there, be available, help document the harassment, be a witness. And certainly you can help the coworker report it if you have the coworker's permission to do so. It really needs to be the person who's experiencing sexual harassment, their decision whether or not to make the report. And so I would recommend talking to your coworker and maybe going together to make a report. Another thing I want to mention is that these laws that prohibit retaliation against people who report sexual harassment protect coworkers who also report harassment. You don't have to be the one being harassed to be protected from retaliation. There's a special provision called the opposition provision in the law that protects people who complain about their coworkers' sexual harassment. And that's why we're calling this campaign Nuestra Voz, Our Voice. It's not just on the person who's experiencing it or the employer. It's on all of us to take action. And that's what the law was designed to do. It was designed to help eradicate discrimination in the workplace, discrimination of all forms, because of race, national origin, sex, disability, et cetera. Great question. And that's what we recommend, to be there for somebody, help find resources, help document the harassment, and then help your coworker report it if the coworker wants to do that.
Judit Vega, a health justice coordinator at the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. What are y'all doing? How are y'all taking part in this movement? And what are you hearing?
So we are taking part in terms of providing this information to the communities that we work with throughout San Antonio, and specifically on the west side of San Antonio. We're using our locations as well on San Pedro and our west side location of Casa de Cuentos to hold pláticas in the future, in the next couple of months, with our partner organizations to help our community be aware of this campaign and help get the word out to our network, to invite them to participate.
And have you heard from, how bad do you think this is? How pervasive?
I know that within the immigrant community, specifically the women that we work with throughout the community, it's pretty pervasive. It is also something that we hear about in the LGBTQ community, in the queer community that we work with and are a part of. It's something that I think people don't talk about a lot, but hopefully this campaign will help bring that to light. Also, I think it's important to note that these communities that are already vulnerable, employment is very important. Stable and gainful employment is an important factor to help people come out of poverty. We as community members also experience discrimination in other areas, such as education and housing. So the employment is so vital. And so if this prohibits our ability to have stable employment and also progress in our careers and take care of our families, its repercussions are pretty large.
Right. And if you have transportation issues, losing a job, it's not just as easy to go find another job, because you have to develop a whole nother infrastructure in order to get to that job and also do everything else that you're responsible for, if it's taking care of your family. It's complicated. And telling people, well, just go get another job, that's a big ask, right?
It really is. And I think especially for women and queer people of color, like, it's so the balance that we strike in terms of working and working out our housing situation and working out our interpersonal issues and transportation and education and childcare and all of that. When you factor in all of the complexity of living in certain communities in San Antonio, it's really difficult to just find another job.
So I understand you're doing outreach, all of y'all, to the people who may be, who have to deal with the workplace sexual assault and the workplace sexual harassment. Well, what are we doing to do work outreach to the people who perpetrate this? I mean, no, we have to let them know that this is going to be, that this has got to stop. You know, we can talk about the consequences. We can also talk about how this is just immoral. I mean, how can we do that? Yeah.
Oh, sure. Sarah. Yes.
Sarah.
So I would say there are lots of resources out there for employers who want to do the right thing and make sure that they take all the steps they can to prevent workplace sexual harassment and address it when it happens. The EEOC provides training. So the EEOC has a great outreach coordinator who goes around and does lots of trainings for employers. And I'm pretty sure they're free. So taxpayer dollars at work. So that's one entity that can provide free trainings to workplaces. There are also, private law firms who represent employers who focus on trainings, and even some smaller, law firms in Texas who who represent employees also do provide training to small businesses who want to make sure that they're taking all the steps they can.
Yeah. So, and Sharon Tahani at Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, how do we tell people that time's up?
Well, I think a lot of the harassment that we see, either coming to us through the intakes, the story that Hudi told us, this is not news, right? This is not a surprise to people that this is not supposed to happen at the workplace. People know that they shouldn't be doing this. So I don't think that we're not talking about gray area kinds of things, right? This is the kind of harassment that any grown person should know should not be happening at a workplace. So I think it's really incumbent on employers to make sure that their policies are clear, that they actually enforce their policies, that they investigate complaints, that they have disciplinary systems, because the harasser only gets to do this if the employer's policies allow it or encourage it.
Sure.
And so it's really on the employers to take action.
But it seemed like before Me Too, it was kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah, the rules are in place, but, you know. But now it seems totally different, that there's a seriousness in this whole world. I mean, things have changed, right, Sharon?
I think things have changed in that people are taking it seriously. I don't think things have changed in that this has been a problem and that it was illegal before and it's illegal now. So this whole idea of, like, there's a new morality, no. The kind of stuff we're talking about is things that should not have been happening at the workplace to begin with.
All right, we're taking another break, and our phone line is 210-614-8980. We'd like to hear your stories about workplace sexual harassment. Were you the target of workplace sexual harassment? How did this impact you? You don't have to give us your name, but we do want to hear your story, because it would really help others, because you're not alone. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. You are listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Our topic today, workplace sexual harassment. The number to call in if you want to share your story, you can be anonymous, 210-614-8980. We got an email from an anonymous listener. I am being touched in an unwanted way. Do I have the right to physically defend myself? Sarah Donaldson, you're an attorney with the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. What would you advise?
Well, I would advise, if you are being sexually assaulted, that is a crime. You can report that to the police. I would advise you to contact an attorney, because in the workplace context, that certainly is part of a pattern of sexual harassment. And in terms of having the right to defend yourself, I would recommend getting safe, if you taking steps to make yourself safe, reporting it, document that you've reported it to your employer. It's always an individual decision what steps to take, but those are some general thoughts on what somebody could do. But if it's a sexual assault or, an assault, that is a crime that can be reported to the police.
Judith Vega at the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. Some people don't really understand the amount of trauma that can come from being put in a position just like that. Having to go to work, which is supposed to be a safe space, where you're dealing with an individual who is touching you in inappropriate ways and refuses to stop. And then you go forward and you tell your boss, hey, this is happening to me, and maybe your boss is not sympathetic. And their response is, well, it's not like you're being raped or anything. Can't you just get over it and move on? And then you have to come back to work the next day and see that individual again, and it continues. And how do, I could just see how that would be an emotionally just terrifying situation. What can we do for folks like that? How can we give them some, at least some counseling or something to help them through this time? What's available?
There are a lot of resources available in terms of counseling for community members. Right now, as well, the City of San Antonio has an increased focus on trauma-informed care and providing organizations and agencies with that information of how to be to provide trauma-informed services. I think it being a survivor of violence myself, it's really important to understand, too, that we have to listen to victims of violence. We have to try to be there for them and understand, too, that sometimes the reactions, a lot of times it's very easy to say, well, like you said, just get another job or just, you know, defend yourself or get over it. A lot of times victims of violence have experienced violence previously in the home, in childhood, and are at increased rates of victimization. And so it's important for us to try to, us as bystanders, maybe to that violence, to understand that we can provide support to them, help them access resources, help them understand that they are not alone, because being a victim of violence is very isolating. And you think that you're the only one, and that if it's always happened to you, it's going to keep on happening to you.
And then you also, psychologically, you do some self, like, what did I do to bring this on? Even though you are the victim and it's not your fault, So Sarah Donaldson, with the attorney with Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, y'all provide some sort of services?
Yes, we do, and we provide free legal services. One thing I forgot to mention earlier, I just wanted to make sure I mentioned the National Sexual Assault Hotline, which is 800-656-HOPE. That's 656-4673. And we provide confidential legal advice and legal services, including negotiation, filing EEOC charges, filing lawsuits. And you can contact us at 800-991-5153. I did want to mention that, you know, you're talking about, well, it's not that bad. I just want to mention, I think we've already mentioned this, but sexual harassment doesn't require any touching. So words alone can be sexual harassment if it's a pervasive pattern of gestures, staring, jokes, sexual comments, images, videos, text messages, and then it goes all the way to touching, assault, and rape. So it's a wide, a broad spectrum, and the law may require that it be more pervasive if it's words alone, but words alone can constitute sexual harassment.
So we got an email from Rachel. My boss makes comments of a sexual nature and says they're jokes, and I shouldn't take those comments seriously because he's joking. Sharon Tahani with the National Women's Law Center, is there some sort of protection for things they call jokes?
As Sarah was saying, it depends on if it meets the standard of it being pervasive enough or if it's actually illegal sexual harassment. But before that happens, it's very possible that the employer has a policy that says this shouldn't be what's happening. And so it may be that this person should look at their employer policy and see if there's somebody they can talk to, the employer. And so short of filing a lawsuit, there may be a way of just remedying it within the employment situation.
And Sarah Donaldson, when the jokes can also not actually be of like a direct sexual nature, but they can be almost but sort of a sexist nature or sexual stereotyping?
Yes, great point. So sexual harassment doesn't require that the sexual comments be made out of desire. It also includes sexist comments like you're not a real man, or you know, you don't act like a woman should. Comments that are more put downs than come ons can also be sexual harassment. I also wanted to say that you can be sexually harassed if there are pervasive comments that they don't have to be necessarily directed at you. There can be an environment of sexual comments or sexist comments that can constitute sexual harassment. But Sharon makes a great point that the statutes that prevent this are a floor and not a ceiling. And so, you know, employers, may have policies that prevent something regardless of whether or not it would be something that you would go file a lawsuit over.
So Sharon Tahani, with the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, you're looking at this from a national view. Where do you think this movement is going? Do you think that have we seen permanent, sustainable change in the workplace because of some of these high-profile cases?
I think we're seeing it both because of the high-profile cases, but also because of the cases that involve low-paid workers, because workers are standing up and saying, this is not how I'm going to be treated at work, and they're being able to find places that they can go that can offer them help. We've seen over 200 pieces of legislation introduced in different states, touching on changing laws because of the Me Too movement. We've seen changes in so many states about things like non-disclosure agreements, expanding who's covered by sexual harassment laws. We're also seeing statutes trying to be moved on the federal level as well.
But seeing these powerful people, people in Congress, people that we see on television, people that we know have a lot of power and sway in our society, seeing them being taken down by these revelations that they have treated others around them, women particularly, in such terrible ways. And they felt like they were immune from prosecution and from being having to deal with the consequences of it. That seems to be unavoidable. That yes, this is change. Something is new here.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think that what we see is that when that happens, more people feel comfortable coming forward and thinking that they can actually get justice as well.
Now, we have employers, they're required. I'm not really sure. I've gone through sexual harassment training, but is that just because I work in a progressive environment? Is this someplace that every workplace is supposed to provide that, Sharon?
It depends on the state that you live in. Certain states like California and New York require there to be training and policies. Other states do not. I do not think Texas does, but it's certainly best practice for an employer to have that kind of training.
And so, Sarah Donaldson, you have to have 15 employees in order to qualify for having sexual harassment EEOC type protections, right?
In Texas, yes. In some states, there are laws that protect work employees of smaller employers. In Texas, both the federal law the federal law requires 15 employees, and the Texas Commission on Human Rights Act, Chapter 21 of the Texas Labor Code, also requires 15 employees. But again, there could be other claims that there are claims for example, negligent training and supervision, negligent hiring. You can certainly sue if you're assaulted at work. You can certainly sue the person who assaulted you. Sometimes you can also get the employer on the hook if it's for a smaller employer. So I would recommend talking to a lawyer if you're not sure.
And Hudit Vega with Esperanza Peace and Justice Center, the LGBTQ community, things are very, very vulnerable. We're not even clear what the law covers, right? I mean, it's still like, was Chapter 7 still before the Supreme Court, something like that? Is that so, Sarah, maybe you can answer that.
Yes. Well, the very same day that we launched our campaign at the Esperanza Center, three important cases were argued before the Supreme Court, and we're expecting a ruling in June. And those are not limited. They weren't sexual harassment cases, but they did address claims under Title VII, which is the federal law that prohibits.
The question is, LGBTQ, do you qualify?
Right.
Are you protected?
Is sex discrimination, is discrimination against somebody because of their sexual orientation or transgender status, is that sex discrimination? I would argue it is. And, you know, people who are familiar with Title VII would argue that you're discriminating against somebody because of their transgender status. That's because of the sex that they were assigned at birth. And that's sex discrimination.
And community members can request free training, and workers can request free confidential legal services by calling 210-212-3779. We also have a list of upcoming Know Your Rights workshops on our website at tpr.org. I do want to thank all of our guests this afternoon, Sarah Donaldson, attorney for the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, Judith Vega, Health Justice Coordinator at the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center, and Sharon Tihani, Director of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund at the National Women's Law Center. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.